Hello, everyone. This is Premier Chess CEO, National Master Evan Rabin. I'm very excited to be here on episode 247 of the Premier Chess podcast, where every week we interview great chess professionals, business coaches, attorneys, many others who have found their passion in whatever it is that they do. This week, we actually have a long-term friend and colleague, Sarathi Ray, who is the president of the Marshall Chess Club. I'm sure most listeners, whether or not you're even in the chess world, have heard of the Marshall. You know, it's been one of the most famous places to play for a long time. But Sarathi also is an attorney. He's a counsel at Lewis Monday PC, where he has a practice concentration in public finance and the corporate services practice group. So, yeah, honestly, I have little idea about what that actually means. So could you tell us what you do, you know, sort of on a day-to-day basis as a corporate attorney?
Sure. Well, first, thank you very much, Evan, for the welcome. It's great to finally be on your podcast. I've listened to a bunch of your previous episodes, and you have a lot of illustrious guests.
So out of curiosity, before, I mean, I'm interrupting my own question, but is there one or two that, you know, maybe particularly interested you?
I listened to the one, I think her name was Rusa.
Golatiani, yeah.
Golatiani, yeah. She was great because I met her once at the chess club, and she's very lively, and I really enjoyed that one. She's a great
person. And I believe your businesses even somewhat overlap, you know. I mean, she's a trader, you know, so but you're, I guess, dealing with people like yourself, I guess.
Right. She's a trainer. I think she also works at a BlackRock, right?
Exactly.
She's a works there. But yeah, we had her down the night that the Marshall hosted a film series. We were watching a movie about Georgian chess women chess players. So she came for that. And that was really interesting to see.
Very cool. Well, yeah, she's amazing. And she's one of the many great chess professionals, you know, who got into finance and whatnot. So, yeah, it was definitely. And she's a former U.S. women's champion.
Right.
Obviously,
right.
Very she's strong player. So
she has a very rich history. And, you know, like you said, she's in finance and I'm in law. And there's many, you know, I think chess players who work in both fields. Right. And so, as you're saying, on a day to day basis as an attorney, I work in public finance, and that consists of the issuance of municipal bonds for taxes and projects. So, for example, if that's housing, low-income housing, or hospitals, or transportation projects, any type of public projects where they need access to additional funds beyond just the tax base. So we issue these, our issuers will issue tax-exempt bonds that are more attractive to investors. Who don't have to pay any taxes on the interest that's earned on those bonds. And as an attorney, my job is to do all like the paperwork for the issuance of those bonds.
So who are the typical people that will reach out to you and actually use you as a client?
So our typical clients are state level issuers. So for example, we're currently doing a transaction for the Connecticut Housing Finance Authority. And we do a lot of their single family home issuances. And we also work for, in New York, we're doing an issuance for the Dormitory Authority for the state of New York. So state level issuers typically work with us, and they're typically our clients. From time to time, we'll serve as underwriters counsel. So the bank, various investment banks will use our services, and they're the purchasers of the bonds.
So one thing that I found interesting, just looking at your page on the Lewis Monday website yesterday, was you're barred in a little bit of an eclectic group of states, I would say. You know, New York, Florida, Connecticut, Michigan. How did that come about? Were you living all over the place?
Or? Philadelphia. No, actually, it was, you know, I first went to school in Florida, University of Miami, and that's the first bar I took. And I also took the New York bar because of, you know, I have a lot of family in this area. And my first law firm I went to, that was called Hawkins, Delfield and Wood in New York. And they liked the fact that I was Bard in Florida, because at the time they had a client, Florida Housing Finance Corporation. So there was the connection there. The addition of Bard just came about as I went to my current firm, Lewis and Monday, because we had clients in Connecticut. I took the Connecticut bar, or I was able to, sorry, I should clarify, I was able to waive into Connecticut. Some states make you or permit you to waive in. Other states make you take the test. So for example, Florida, I had to take the test. But for states like Connecticut, I think Philadelphia, Michigan, you can waive in as long as you're in active standing and licensed in another state.
Got it. Got it. Got it. Interesting. So we've had several attorneys on the podcast, many of which are, you know, big chess players like Lisa Malikina, you know, many others. How have you seen chess helping you in your legal career?
Well, I think chess helps in many ways. I think for in different fields of law. So, for example, I think in litigation, and then maybe Alyssa spoke more to this, but I feel like it could help you see both sides of an issue. You know, you're seeing the opponent's arguments as you decide upon your own strategy. All right. And kind of like prophylactic thinking, right, for chess players. Whereas in my field, although it's not litigation, I really feel it helps. Alyssa may have spoken more to this in litigation, but I think chess definitely gives you the opportunity to see what your opponent is thinking or what his ideas are as you craft your own strategy, right? And so kind of like prophylactic thinking, right, for chess players. I think that'd be great in litigation. In my corporate law, I think it's very helpful to have an analytical mind and consider all the different factors and features of a problem, whether it's a legal problem, which involves like different parties and different interests, or even a chess problem, right, where there's different factors happening, long-term features, short-term features, and you need to kind of balance them all to come up with a suitable move for the position.
Very cool. Very cool. And to take a big step back, sure. how did you first get into chess?
So I got, you know, I think like a lot of kids, my father taught me and my brother chess when we were, I think I was about 7 or 8 growing up. And I would play.
And
with
where was that?
I grew up in Newington, Connecticut.
Got it.
Yeah. And, but I wasn't really that great. You know, I think my older brother would just beat me over and over again. And so, but I still, you know, I enjoyed playing and trying, and I really took off, I would say, as a player when I went to when I went to college, actually. I didn't really involve myself in scholastic chess, but I picked it up when I went to college, and that was at the University of Connecticut. And UConn had a very good chess club. It was mostly made up, it wasn't even mostly students, it was mostly adults who lived in the area. And they're all about 1900 players, so class A players. So at the time I was just like 14, 1500, but every week I would lose to these 1900 players, but it was a really great training. I learned a lot from them. And I was able to, you know, win my first class tournament. That was the, I think it was held in, it was the Continental Chess in Woburn, Mass. And it was, I think, 1995, and I was in the under 1600 section. And I just remember that it was easy, perhaps because I was playing the 1900s every week at my local chess club. So
very cool.
I definitely like learn by fire.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool to see. You know, I hear a lot of adults saying, you know, they wish they got better, you know, as a kid, you know, this and that. And look, I typically don't try to, you know, sugarcoat it. Like, of course, it's definitely better, I think, if you've learned chess, you know, much earlier on, of course, like anything else. You know, I've had several rabbis on the podcast, for instance, and I do say, and I've talked to the rabbis about the idea that, yes, it's, you know, maybe better to learn Torah early on. You know, for instance, you know, but yes, there are people who, you know, start to learn that, okay, a lot later in life.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think I've heard, I think Anand said it great. He said, like, chess is a language, right? And he said, if you learn it when you're young, you're kind of like a native speaker, right? Whereas if you could still learn it as you're older, it's just you might not catch all the nuances or become as fluent as someone who learned it when they're young. But of course, you could see that at our chess club, the players are younger and younger, and they're pretty sharp, so
Yeah, and of course you can
yeah.
see, I was just telling my wife that I played at the Marshall like 2 nights ago, like an 11-year-old. She was like, "Oh, like, were you nice to him?" I'm like, "No, he was not trying to be nice to me. He was trying to crush me." Like, luckily, yes, I did end up winning, but like, it wasn't easy.
No, I've never played like such a slew of young people, like 11, 9. I mean, I played a 7-year-old the other, a few months ago. I mean, he was really cute. He was asking me how old I was afterwards, and I said, I'm
Oh
37. I'm like 40 years
my
older than him. But no, it's amazing. I mean, it's great to see, but it's really incredible to see how young and motivated and they are. So
Yeah, and it's interesting because I had a kid the other day at our last tournament at Grace Church on March 12th. We have another one coming up on April 16th, but basically he's in about maybe fourth or fifth grade, and he said, "Oh, I'm a little nervous about playing, some of the high schoolers in the section." And I said, actually, quite the opposite. Like, if anything, like, I'd actually prefer in many ways to play an adult rather than a kid because I know that they're not
definitely.
that much underrated.
Right,
At the end
right.
of the day, like, I mean, look, I do. Look, I actually recently got back into chess, and I'm actually kind of embarrassed to say, quite frankly, that my rating is like literally lower than it's been in 15 years.
Yeah, no,
It's like 2009.
I'm in the same boat.
My peak is 2250. But and I'm someone, I forget who it was actually yesterday. Oh yeah, that's right. I was at the Manhattan Jewish Experience Gala last night. Of course, the founder, Rabbi Wilds, has been on the podcast before. But yeah, so someone that I met at the gala, he happened to be from St. Louis and has heard of course, I asked him, like, about the biggest chess piece in the world in St. Louis. He's like, "Yeah, of course, downtown." which was kind of cool. But he actually asked me. He was like, I was telling him about, what we do, corporate classes, school programs, et cetera. And he said, like, "Are you improving in chess, like yourself?" And I was like, I don't know how to answer
Yeah,
that.
that's a great
My honest answer is
yeah.
like, I'm kind of at my lowest rating in 15 years. We'll see.
Yeah. No, I kind of feel the same way. I'm also at my lowest rating, and I think it is hard to improve as you get older, and then you do different things. So, for example, I also work as the president of the Marshalls, so I do time is given to that, but I also teach online to some students. So you kind of start to see the game differently, but you need to more at a basic, simplistic level. As you're teaching, but you also need to do your own kind of chess, right? And it's hard to carve out that time and motivation. And yeah, no, I understand that it is quite challenging to improve as you get older.
Yeah, so it's definitely somewhat difficult. And yeah, I do obviously want to ask you questions about the Marshall and whatnot.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess before we get into that, you are obviously actively playing and whatnot, which, by the way, I think is very important in, for lack of a better term, chess politics.
Yes, I agree.
I know that there are. Look, I'm not going to name names or whatever, but there are a lot of chess people, out there who run chess companies that are also in chess politics that, barely know how to move a pawn.
Right. No, I agree. I agree 100%.
which
Yeah.
and that's why, I think like someone like yourself, someone like John Fernandez, who's been on the podcast before, who's on the executive board, you and John, for instance, and many others, but you're just two that come to mind right now. you know, you're both strong chess players, and you're also both very strong in business, which not a lot of people have, you know.
Well,
so
thank
in
you.
fact
Yeah, I really, yeah, I really like, I enjoy coming and playing at the club on Monday, and I really try to just come as a player and not, you know, engage too much as a president. But it's nice for me to see how, you know, how the building is, how the tournaments are being run.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely very hands on, you know, and the truth is, I'm just going to be, you know, somewhat blunt here. You know, one thing that I didn't particularly love about the Marshall a little bit, you know, over the years is if you do, and I think it's actually become a lot better. There's still some of this today, but it's gotten a lot better. Where, you know, look, I for many years, I mean, I actually did recently, as you know, rejoin the club for the first time since high school. You know, which is a long time, but the truth is, right, I used to be very, very active, going 2-3 days a week, you know, to the club. Yet on the board of directors, there are like so many people that I've never met once in my life.
Right. No.
and I'm like, who are these people? Like, I see them on the Marshall website. You know, they're clearly people.
Yes. No, I had the same experience.
Around, you know, like who. Who are these people?
So, yeah, I can understand. And, you know, unfortunately, I had the same experience when I joined in October of 2020. At that time, I didn't meet or I didn't know any of the people who were on the existing board, you know, even though I would, you know, go to the club and play either on Mondays or the weekends. I just never met them before. And, you know, people have said to me that it's nice to have a president who comes in and plays and we see and we know. So now
yeah,
we do have some
and
players
from
that come
time
in.
To time, you know, it's been like that, you know, like Doug Belisi, for instance,
right.
You know, in his time, I remember was very active. I remember actually analyzing some games with him, you know, him and his wife, Mariana, used to be, you know, pretty friendly with, you know, at the time, but. Yeah, a lot of others, you know, have not been, you know, so hands on. So,
sure.
So tell me, what made you first even decide to run to be, you know, president of the Marshall?
Yeah, I think so. I ran for the board in, like I was saying, in October of 2020. That was during the pandemic, actually. And I think, you know, it came to my mind before, about 2 years ago, when Brian Quick was the executive director. And I asked Brian about it, and he said, yeah, there's a 2-year, you know, residency requirement. So I signed up for membership and waited the 2 years. But my motivation was to give back to the chess club that I, you know, that I really loved and enjoyed in some way. I felt very lucky to have like this chess club here in New York City, you know, where you don't have to travel. Like many money players have to wait, and, you know, they don't have good tournaments near them, right? So they have to travel to other states, stay in a hotel, carve out a whole weekend. It's more of a time and money commitment. And so we're very fortunate, I think, to have the Marshall right here in our own backyard. You know, you could pop in for an evening if you want and play a few games or one game or a weekend and not have to worry about transportation, hotel costs. And it's also, you know, just a beautiful building and a nice neighborhood. So
yeah, you raise a good point. I mean, for instance, we're both, you know, playing in the FIDE Mondays tournament right now. And yeah, I mean, you know, look, the entry fee is $50 and you get, you know, 6 FIDE rated games.
Exactly.
You know,
what a great deal.
I was just talking to, you know, for instance, my friend Akash, who's actually playing in the FIDE Mondays right now as well, you know, and he said he was going to a great tournament now in LA, you know, this past weekend, which he did. Took actually, I think, a buy or two to even play that. But yeah, I mean, it's $600, you know, as an entry fee, you know, plus like travel, you know. And and honestly, I was just like, look, you know, frankly, I was actually after the Marshall Friday Night Blitz tournament, I was with him and Sam Schmackle and this guy Joseph Otero, who you all know, of course. And yeah, he was talking about the tournament. I was like, honestly, I was thinking like, this is awesome that you're doing it. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah. But
like, also super expensive, super far. Like, you know,
right.
You know, honestly, if
right.
I'm
was, it,
about,
was it just for a weekend or for like a whole week?
Well, it's a FIDE, you know, 9-round tournament. You know, I think it
Yeah.
just finished actually. Chris Yu, you know, who has been on the podcast, actually got second. And
Okay.
you know, and it, yeah, I think John Burke, you know, got first.
Uh-huh.
But
Okay. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, look, no doubt it's a very good tournament, but I'm just saying it's also very, very expensive, you know. So the
Definitely.
look, obviously it's, you know, somewhat apples and oranges too. You're not getting a Norm, for instance, and in FIDE Mondays. But you know, look, it's good practice, and frankly, like right now, I'm just getting back into chess, you know. So I'm not thinking about norms or anything. I'm surely not, you know.
Yeah,
So,
exactly.
but
I'm in the same position where, like, you know, a lot of our players would like FIDE rated tournaments, which we have, and there's only a small percentage, I think, who are like competing for norms, right? But we do have, you know, occasionally at least two or three, we try to have norm events a year, in New York, like closed tournaments. And we have one, I think, open coming up in the summer, the New York Invitational. And so, you know, we do try to cater to those individuals as well, because I know it's really important to give them opportunities as
yeah,
well.
that's a good point. You know, you do have to cater to, you know, everyone. You know, for instance, I was talking to my friend, Bob Hellman, about a year ago, about the St. Louis Club, which obviously, look, nothing against Rex and everything. They're doing like a lot of great work, of course, bringing in, you know, a lot of top players into the country, and you know, working doing the U.S. Championship every year and whatnot. But you know, Bob lives in Missouri, maybe about an hour away from St. Louis, you know, and I was surprised when he said, you know, I almost never go to the club. I was like, I don't know, it's an hour away. There's so much. But he's like, if you're not like 2600, there's not a lot for you at the club, you know. And he's a master. He's 2200. It's not like he's a weak player by any means. But you know, he just. That's basically what he said. You know, they catered to the elite, you know, and you know, that's about it.
I didn't realize that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like, you know, I take everything with a grain of salt, and you know, I've since looked there, and there are tournaments, you know, here and there, but it's just not their focus, you know. So
Yeah, I'm really
speaking of
glad
what.
we have the structure that we do, because you know there's even like I think Wednesdays we have like an under 2000 tournament. You know, so I think it's important to have tournaments where people do feel comfortable, you know, and you know, challenged but sufficiently so. And you know, you don't want a Class C player playing like a experienced master, right? They'll be
Sure.
I think discouraged. And then on the good thing is on the premier, the weekends, we even have like, you know, IMs or GMs playing. There's people who, you know, if they want that level of challenge, they have that too. So I'm glad it's kind of spread out.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I actually was featured in the Buy Best Move column in Chess Life in January. And you know, one thing that I mentioned was, you know, I got to play, you know, Grandmaster Lendemann all the time, Grandmaster Rode all the time, many other grandmasters, but they're probably the two that I play the most. You know, and it was just something I took for granted, you know, when I first moved to Boston and I started playing tournaments. And you know, my friend Natasha Christensen, Larry Christensen's wife, actually, you know, there was one day I felt a little bit like accidentally arrogant, you know, because it was a typical Saturday tournament in Boston, and one day she, like my first tournament that I played there at the Boylston, you know, she mentioned to me like, "Oh, that's a strong tournament." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "There's several like people over 2200." I'm like, this is a weak tournament for the Marshall. And obviously, you know, it's a Saturday tournament. There's five grandmasters, like not even for a lot of money. You know, you used to see Gadakowski once in a while at the club, you know, just playing for $100. You know, Lenderman too, you know, Lenderman's been on the podcast too, you know, so many others, you know, like
No,
top
that's great. We
players,
have a
you know.
nice kind of a rich heritage of, I think, of top players in the New York area. And you know, we have some definitely famous ones who've like come through here and developed here. So it's really great background. heritage at the Marshall Chess Club.
So tell me, what are your goals currently with the club? Is there a project you're working on?
Sure.
Your goal for the club?
Yeah, I mean, one thing we're doing is like every month we have like a speaker series, highlighting different aspects of our club. So I think this month there's a women's tournament that's going to be occurring. And one of our goals has been to draw more girls, young girls and women into chess. It seems like that's kind of a national goal for all chess clubs, but we're trying to make the effort here in the Marshall. So not only do we have the speaker for March, which is National Women's Month, but we have girls only tournaments on Fridays. And that's really been growing. I think it's up to like 12 to 14 players now. So that's
nice.
Great to see. Yeah. Next month is actually April, which is National Autism Awareness Month. We're having a panel on autism awareness on the 25th, where Justin Sarkar, who is an IM and he's has autism, we're gonna have a doctor, Joel Sneed, who's like kind of who's a scientist and has experience working with those who have autistic and firmly believes that chess can be used to help them. And we have another individual who's in 10th grade. His name is Pranav Shankar, who I think he's an expert now, but he's also going to be there. And the three of them will kind of speak and highlight their experiences, both with chess and having the disability and how they've been able to accomplish what they have despite of those challenges. So those
yeah,
are
and
our,
by the way, I mean, I could, personally talk of Justin as a friend that I've known for a long time. We actually played on the same team 1 year in Parsippany I think about 2016. I think 2015. Anyway, that year I played with Alan Cantor, who was actually on my winning team back in 2007. And Justin and this guy, Vince Clem, who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. But
that's going to be April 25th. So if you get a chance, it'd be great to see you at the club. My wife will be there. So it's a nice,
very nice.
Very
nice. We'll see. Well, yeah, it's also after tax season. So who knows? Maybe
that's right.
Could come as well.
We'll be free.
We'll see.
So those are two of our immediate projects. I think long term, we have just constantly making the experience better for the players, whether it's like improvements to our website or registering for tournaments. I think our staff overall is really great. They do, they're really, because now we're up to like over 1,000 members, right? So,
wow.
But our physical space is still the same. So we're still, trying to manage crowd control on the weekends. There's a lot of kids, so we have challenges with that. But we have a lot of exciting projects to handle that. There's one topic I just like to talk about. There's another office. I don't know if you've seen downstairs. It's a smaller playing room. Yeah.
I've had a chance
where
to
we played,
play Dina.
Where we played
and,
Dina, exactly.
And then I also played, you aren't there actually, but I got a chance to play Anna Kremlin and Pia Kremlin down there. So,
okay. Yeah. I played her on Saturday. Oh, you played her Monday, I think.
I played her
after
Monday.
Your game. Right. I played her the Saturday. I played the daughter, which I think was a wise decision. And Anna.
Well, it's funny. I beat Anna the first game
right.
We played, which was awesome. And then she's like, "Now you got to play my mom." And I was like, "Well, like, I don't know if I'm gonna play." And then she destroyed me.
Yeah, it was
fun.
Great. It was really great fun having them come. And so that's one thing we're thinking about is having that set up more as kind of a studio with like, a Marshall banner, and we'll have streamers come in and they could use that where it'll be nicely set up with like nice sound quality and picture quality. Because I think the members really enjoyed having both Dina as well as Anna and Pia come. So it is really great having them in stream. That's something further down the line.
Yeah, well, that's cool, and I've seen that, and it's just great to see you keeping up with the ages, per se.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just the modern times. So,
And I did want to actually take a step back just about, autism real quick,
sure.
because I think actually this doctor, Rob Bernstein, actually the father of my former business partner, Jonah Bernstein, actually is an autism specialist. He's the owner of RJB Educational Services. And he did actually write a guest blog post for us a few months ago, just talking about how he actually uses chess as a tool all the time, working with autistic kids and motivating them, teaching them
That's great to know.
decision
Maybe if
making,
you can,
through chess. And,
where does he live in?
he's in Westchester, so.
Oh, okay. Wait, great. If maybe if you could put me in touch with him by email, I'll be happy to let him know about our panel, and it'd be great to have him down as well. He's free.
Yeah, definitely. Well, as a side note, I will definitely make a note to do that today.
All right.
I
Thank you.
love
Thank
making
you.
connections right on
Yeah.
the
No, it's great to know. It's good to know.
podcast. That's
It's
great.
great to know because you never know who knows who, right?
No, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, look, the new room that you have down there is, yeah, I thought super cool. I didn't, know about it.
Yeah.
I've been to
Right.
Marshall a while, but yeah, it's really great. And look, I mean, Twitch streaming obviously is
It's huge, right?
pretty big today.
Absolutely.
Hikaru and everyone. We have our small channel, twitch.tv/PremierJess. And just as a reminder for our
Okay.
listeners, every Wednesday at 12, we typically record our podcast episodes. So if you do want a chance to ask questions to our guests live, you could do so by coming onto our Twitch channel Wednesdays at 12 o'clock. So one thing that, I've heard a lot of people kind of say, with the Marshall, over the years, it's definitely changed a lot, for sure. Growing up, it was, honestly not so organized. It wasn't, so much of, look, it's a nonprofit, but of course, there's a lot more classes going on. There's a lot like bigger tournaments, and
It's great to hear.
I think for sure, it's definitely a lot more of a business, than it was, in the past. And frankly, I think that's, a little bit good and bad, in a way. The Marshall really used to be just a place, to hang out. It was cool. And yes, I mean, I remember years ago there were like people that, let their membership lapse, and they were still like unofficial members for like over a year. Back in the day, obviously that's not happening today. In fact, I just got an alert: your membership's expiring in a month. I was like, well, that's pretty cool actually. Yeah, I mean, do you ever kind of struggle with it being like, a tournament club versus a casual club,
Sure.
or
Sure,
how do
definitely.
you
I
see that?
think, I've always felt like the Marshall, I mean, at least ever since I came to New York in 2005, and I was like a 1900 player at that time. But I remember taking part in these weekly tournaments. I think it was FIDE Monday, and I was just like, constantly kind of losing. And I realized I need to take things more seriously because everyone here takes it very seriously. And that kind of motivated me, and I became a master. I think that really kind of always in my mind, the Marshall was kind of a place for like kind of serious tournaments, where people take the hobbies kind of seriously. But I at the same time, we wanted to be a comfortable place for newcomers to the game, especially for kids, right? Beginners. So we have a lot of camps that we're running in the summertime. I think that's been important to us. So we want to like strike a balance for sure, where we make it both. We have our monthly speaker series. Those are quite social actually, because after the panel kind of finishes up, we have usually a like great opportunity for people to kind of socialize and have
Yeah, well, they're definitely great.
some
I went to the
pizza.
one with Daniil Weiermatri, who of course has been on the
Right.
podcast before. And Definitely entertaining. I mean, I've known Neil obviously for many years, and which have some partnerships together, but never actually heard him do a lecture before, so that was like super cool.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And that was a great night, and people really enjoyed it, I think. We've had a lot of good events in the past, so we're gonna definitely keep that going. And I think that will hopefully kind of create more of a social aspect to the club. So it won't be just strictly tournaments. I think that would kind of make it like soulless, no different from any other place to play jazz. So
Yeah,
hopefully we're
definitely. And I know
striking
you
good
also have,
vibes.
like a monthly pizza night, like on
Yeah.
Tuesdays,
Yeah.
things like that. So, yeah, super cool. So, as a player and a little bit of a coach as well, what like general improvement tips do you have for, maybe 15, 16, 1700s that are looking to,
Sure.
take chess to the next level?
Well, I was telling, my students are they're newbies, I guess, in the tournament world, but they are just in high school, and they're around like 1100 or something. But I was telling them, to always try to play a section up, especially like if you could score like 50% in your section, move to the higher section. And then, start all over again where you're, maybe only getting a draw or 1 point out of four, and then work your way up to 50%. I think it's always good to play one section up. I think that's something that really helped me when I was younger. I was going to UConn at the time, but I had no choice because I was playing against these 1900s. But I really feel like if you play a section up, it's enough where you won't get discouraged, but at the same time, you'll be forced to kind of adapt to these stronger players. And a good way to get kind of a free lesson is just to ask them to go over the game with you afterwards, right? And so you have a stronger player kind of explaining his thought process, and you realize you get a more objective, I think, view of the game that you just played. So you might right away point out the mistakes they made, and over time you'll see like they'll adapt and strengthen that way. So. The other big leap I think that I made in my own personal development was like studying endgame books. I really found like I remember one summer I was I think like 1600 or something, and I read that Sharevsky's endgame strategy book, and I just like jumped to like the A level like really quickly. I don't know if it happened for everyone, but I feel like learning endgames really kind of helps sharpens your mind, not only calculation, but helps
Is
you
there
see
any
like
particular
the
endgame
course.
book that you've liked?
So as far as strategy, I really liked Sharevsky's Endgame Strategy. That's a classic. And as far as like theoretical endgames, the Jesus Davila's 100 Endgames You Must Know, I thought that was really terrific. Yeah, I can definitely recommend those too. And they're very like accessible. To read, very pleasant formats. It's not like I mean some of the like Dvoretsky ones where you have to be a more of a maybe really studious can be very difficult to
Sure.
get through. So I like these
Yeah,
two.
no, they could definitely be quite overwhelming, for sure. But yeah, I mean, end games, clearly is very important. If there's one common theme that people actually on the podcast, strong grandmasters have been on, you got to study end games, like for instance, one podcast guest, Keith Arkell, wrote his book, Arkell Endgames. Arkell Endings, I think it was actually called. So, and I first met Keith, by the way, when he was living in New York for a summer and played at the Marshall quite a bit years ago, actually. So,
I think I remember I listened to a podcast of his or interview with him, and I think I remember him saying that Endgame success was a big reason for like his own success as a player. He really definitely lauded that.
yeah, no, definitely for sure. Now, what you said about playing up, of course, is a very common opinion. It's actually something that I somewhat controversially probably disagree with. Actually, my friend Nathan Restica, who you certainly know, who's been around the Marshall for a while, I was once going to a tournament with him, and he was giving us a ride. I don't know, probably the amateur team East the year we were playing together. And I remember he said, you know, I actually don't recommend people play up, you know. And I said, well, what do you mean? Like, everyone does play stronger players and get, you know, good experience. He's like, yeah, that's true. But, you know, it's also important to learn how to be consistent, you know, against weaker players. You know, and one thing that he mentioned to me, which I didn't really believe at first until I really thought about it, but he said 90% of players who play up do so because they're afraid they're not going to win their own section. And I was like, well, like, no, like, I typically play up because I just want to play better players. You know, that's what everyone tells me. But the truth is, right, Princess, right now, if I'm playing, yes, my rating happens to be under 2,200 and even 2,100 now, which I find a little crazy, actually. But the truth is, right, if I go to a tournament now, play an under 2,100 or under 2,200 section, if I do anything less but win first or second place and I win a pretty good prize, the tournament was a failure, pretty much, just to be direct. You know, but if I play in the open section and I score one upset or two, then guess what? I'm satisfied because I scored an upset or two. So learning how to, you know, deal with the pressure of playing, you know, lower rated players, I think is, you know, very important as well. You know, one thing that I do suggest to students all the time, actually, is what I call my 50-point policy. So no matter what your opponent's rating actually is, whether it's 1,200 or Grandmaster, you want to treat them like they're 50 points higher than you. You give them a little bit of respect, but not too much respect.
Okay, that's good. I like that. Yeah.
You know, something I kind of came up with a couple of years ago. But, yeah, so, look, I think, you know, maybe a mix is the best. You know, and I think that's partially because, you know, yes, playing at the Marshall and playing open tournaments, you know, when I was 1,800, you know, yes, I had my chances to play just on a Thursday, four rated games tonight. You know, exactly. I got to play in the first round, you know, a strong master, you know, sometimes even a grandmaster, you know, it was not uncommon for me. But then, you know, when it came to, you know, other tournaments, you know, I play my own section, you know, so it's a mix, of course.
It's a mix. Yeah, you're right. There is, you know, consistency is very important, right? So,
you know, because I have seen, in particular with kids, but, you know, some adults do, you know, it's like they get actually quite good at playing like stronger players, but then all of a sudden they're playing someone like around their level or weaker, and they can't win.
No, I know. I mean, I'm sure I suffer from that too. I feel like when I play a stronger player, kind of like, just the adrenaline, the excitement really constantly makes me focus more. And, you know, and there's no pressure, right? Whether it's a draw or a win or whatever. But I think when I play a weaker person, sometimes I get sucked into thinking too much about the ratings and underestimate them. And, you know, I realize after a while, not only do I not have my chances, but they're taking over.
Look, 2 weeks ago, you know, at the first round of the Thursday Open at the Marshall, you know, I let go a little bit and, you know, lost to a 1,600 that, you know, frankly, I never should have lost to. I mean, look, he played decent. I'm not going to lie, you know, for sure. But look, there's no question I shouldn't have lost it. You know, it's just like, I shouldn't have. But, you know, I did let go of my focus a bit, and then, you know, anything happened. So, anyway, I really wanted to, you know, thank you for taking, you know, some time to talk from, you know, a variety of subjects, from bonds to, you know, the intersection of chess and education, to the UConn Club, to, you know, kids versus adults, autism, improvement tips, streamers, inspiration for women to play. You know, and more. Is there anything else you'd like to add while you're on the podcast today?
No, it's just, I think that covered a lot of ground. I really appreciate you taking the time to have me on the podcast. And, you know, you've got a lot of great hosts. So I look forward to hearing more of your podcast in the future and seeing you at the club more.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, well, it's definitely great to be in touch. And yeah, we do have a lot of great episodes coming up. Next week we actually have I usually don't do this actually, but a little sneak preview. Next week we
Okay.
actually have a episode coming up with the world champion of correspondence chess. Do you know who that is?
I think is it
Well,
John Edwards or
that is him.
okay.
So yeah,
Okay.
we got a great episode with him lined up next week. I did actually recently listen to his interview with Ben Johnson of Perpetual Chess. So I'm going to try to make sure to ask some other questions that were not on there, but he's been around the block for a while, so definitely has a lot to talk about. So,
Okay,
but
yeah.
yeah, thank you so much. And lastly, if anyone wants to
Sure.
reach out, learn a little bit more about either the martial or your legal practices, as you do
Yes.
know, we have a large array of listeners, both chess players, not chess players, business people, not business people, et cetera. So, if anyone does want to learn either about the martial or your legal practice, what would be the best way for people to reach you?
Sure. Our, they can contact me if it's a legal question on our website, but also on our chess club website, which is martialchessclub.org, we have our contact emails, so they could definitely get in touch with me then, in that
Okay,
way.
amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time, Sarathi. Look forward to seeing
Yeah.
you at the club or outside soon.
Sure.
And have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thanks, Evan. Great being here.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.